As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake Doctor's Orders. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Look up. Look way up. He sits alone atop the standings. Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports. Now on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Hour of the August radio show here in February. I'm Bob McCowan. That's John Shannon right there. Richard Petty will join us a little bit later on, the former CEO of MLSE.
This has got to be a special weekend for him, Bob. It really does have to be a special weekend for him. When you consider how I think he was part of the Palestra basketball group. I think that he was part of Palestra.
Well, why don't you ask him when he comes
in? This is one of the great pearls of your franchise when you get to host the
Yeah, I wonder if he feels All-Star that way. Game.
I bet he does.
Well, all right. Well,
I've been wrong before.
You have a bookmaker? Do you want to make a bet?
Yeah. No, I'll make a bet with you.
No, not with me, with a bookmaker.
No, I'll make it with you.
Well, I don't want to make a bet.
Dinner.
No. No, I don't want to bet on something as irrelevant as what he's going to say.
No, you know I'm
going to
win.
Well, I think he's going to say that, but
because he's listening, and he probably hopes I buy him dinner too.
I wouldn't be the least bit surprised. Glenn Healy of the NHL on Sportsnet joins us. Hello, Heels. How are you?
I'm fantastic. And you know what? Speaking of All-Star games, I think the one in Nashville was my favorite, the best one I've ever been to.
Why?
It was the community just embraced everybody, the country music, the way the players embraced the game, the fact that players could get out and have some fun, and there weren't cell phone cameras everywhere. They kind of acted like themselves. It was just just a real fun weekend, and I thought the game was the most competitive, and the skills were the guys all bought in. So it was a good weekend for me, and not just the basketball one here in our city. It kept me anything but fantastic.
So I'm a wee bit confused. So you're of Scottish descent. We all know that.
Yeah.
You like your pipes and you like your haggis. And it'll be a brabry moonlich nicht nicht. Have all that said, is there some kind of attachment with which I have been heretofore unfamiliar between Scots and country music? You are telling me that you love Nashville, the home of country music.
I like country music.
But you're not a Scot. That's the point. Try and pay attention to the whole...
How am I different than Healy?
He's a Scot. So I'm
getting
to the
other
point.
Where were you born?
Well, he's born in Pickering or wherever he was born. But here's the other thing. You know who Johnny Reid is?
Yes, of course.
So Johnny Reid is like this, you know, pretty significant country music star. Well, if you talk to him, he sounds like he's right off the boat, you know?
It's almost like all of them lose their accents when they sing. Adele, look at her accent.
Sheena Easton.
And she puts the voice to words and sings, and it's gone. It's the most gorgeous thing.
Yeah, I just don't know what the connection between being a Scot and country music is.
So when you listen to a song, do you listen to the music or do you listen to the words?
Well, the music is what catches you first.
First, you tap your foot. You like that. It's kind of catchy. Yeah. Which would be what bagpipes are.
But I sing the song. I sing the songs, O'Heels.
Much to our chagrin.
Add the words to it, and the words are pretty good. I mean, it's a lot of dogs dying, a lot of sad breakups, and a lot of things that are not so pleasant, but the words are beautiful. Yeah. So I was a big fan in every way.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad.
And, you know, having Vince Gill, having him mic'd and his wife, Amy Grant, mic'd, and him basically saying if he wins the game, he's going to go home and get lucky. You don't get that coast to coast anywhere. We hit.
I hear you.
That's a moment you don't ever get.
I understand.
So the question is, have you recovered from your time in Nashville?
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, no, are you sure?
You know how.
Are Johnny, you sure?
Show after show. Here we go. Let's put it on the air. So I didn't do the 1 minute hit from up in the perch like some of the superstars. We actually had to dig in and do some work.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
I won't name
names,
but Kiprios was one of them.
Please.
So how do they announce the starting lineup tonight for the Leafs? Ladies and gentlemen.
A bunch of guys named who?
No, here's what you do. Is program. You can't tell the Leafs without a program.
You can't tell them when you got one.
Oh, my goodness. Cap space.
I want to get to that in a minute. But I have a question for you. Because John Paul Morosi was on with us, and we were talking baseball, and I got thinking about some stuff. And historically, they call the month of August the dog days of summer. It's a baseball reference, and it dates back to the early part of the last century when baseball teams principally traveled by bus or by train, and of course, there was no air conditioning in vehicles at that point, so it's the hottest month of the year almost no matter where you go in North America, and we, you know, it makes some sense. Some teams are out of the race already. You can't really see the finish line yet. It's August. You got another month left of baseball to play. You got to get on that train and go on that trip, you know, hours and hours, and it's stinking hot. So the dog days made sense. Today, I don't know whether they are dog days or not, but I was trying to equate baseball and hockey, and I wondered if there are dog days for a hockey player. And if there are we in the dog days?
I think we're out of the dog days.
Oh, already done?
You're in the stretch drive now where teams are, you're looking at the standings every single day, recognizing if I'm an Ottawa Senator, did that loss last night, am I out? Do I have a chance to get in?
Right.
What do I have to win to get in? Do I have to have a 780 win percentage? I mean, this is the sprint just to get in. There were times, I think, historically in an NHL season, games say 30 to 45, you know, Christmas is in the way and, you know, the travel starts to get a little hard. You've lost that sprint you had when you came out of training camp.
Yeah.
But with the parity in the league and the fact that it's one win a month to get in or out of the playoffs, you rarely have that dog day where you say, okay, my give a blank meter this month isn't going to be as good as it is next month. It just works that way, but the points are just too valuable.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is season, as I recall, November, December was the most I ever looked at the standings at that time of year, simply because everybody thought they had a chance, and everybody was, you know, there isn't a giant disparity in points. Even now, there isn't a giant disparity of points between the last team that has a chance to go to the playoffs and the 28th, 29th, and 30th teams. Like there used to be. I mean, there used to be 30 points. Now it's 12.
A player's psyche, too. You know, there was a time you play your first game and there's a good chance you're going to play game 400. The league just didn't seem to have that quality of player where there was always someone knocking on the door. Most players are on really short deals, and they're fighting for their lives and their living and their craft to make sure that they don't have to go to the KHL and have 20 minutes of sunlight every day and try to make a living. So it is different. And this Leaf team tonight is, as bad as it may be, maybe the worst team that's ever been rostered for a game. All those guys, for the most part, are fighting for their playoff lives. Or their
careers.
Careers,
yeah.
Not playoff
yeah.
lives.
Yeah. Careers.
They're just looking to play and fight one more day. So you'll get compete out of them. Skill versus will, the skill's not going to be there.
So what kind of a chance do they have? I mean, even against a team as, honestly, inept as the Edmonton Oilers are and have been.
Yeah, they're in the same bowl of soup. They're the worst against the worst. But
you had to trade rosters. You had to trade rosters. What would you do?
Well, you'd trade it in a heartbeat if you're the Maple
Absolutely.
Leafs.
Well,
in a nanosecond.
So
I would I'd take just one guy off the Edmonton roster.
And
I'd be happy with that.
Yes. Yeah.
You can keep the rest. Just give me one.
There's a couple guys you'd take, too.
Yeah, but if I had just that one, I'd be a happy guy. I'll go back to 93 when we played the Pittsburgh Penguins in the second round. They had won two cups in a row. They were a dynasty. They had everybody, Yager, Lemieux, Francis, everybody. Team was stacked and loaded. And this Islander team with a bunch of rookies and, you know, an injured Pierre Turgeon, we went and played them, and we beat them in a seven-game series. So anything is possible. And you're not going to write people off. One thing I know about Babcock is that if he's going to get the most out of whatever they have on that roster. So for him to get what he's got out of Matt Hunwick and Morgan Riley this year, he finds ways to push players' buttons, and it works.
What kind of player in the end was Dion Phaneuf for the Maple Leafs?
I found him to compete every shift. I don't think he took shifts off, but there are times when his reads were really questionable. And, you know, the Ottawa game last Saturday, it took all of 5 seconds for him on the ice to cost his team the entire game. Day and a half to prepare, and in 5 seconds it's gone. And so I find he's slowing down. He can't play against the best players. He has trouble turning. Some of his decisions with the puck are questionable. And I think it was the wise move for the Leafs to move on from that. It solves a bunch of issues. It solves the captaincy issue. You don't have to deal with that anymore. Captain's gone. It solves some cap issues. It solves term. It allows you to go into next season today with 8 players on roster. 8. So this could be a total rebuild. And we aren't even at trade deadline where we could be looking at 4
right.
under contract
right.
for next year.
So, I mean, there are people on the 417 just outside of Ottawa driving out the road, because you're the one guy saying that maybe Ottawa, they got rid of some money, but what are they getting back?
Well, for Ottawa, they're happy.
If you were an Ottawa coach or a manager, would you have done the deal?
No.
Okay, that's my question. That's my point.
Because it might look good last night. It might look good next year. 5 years from now, I don't think it's going to look good. But they're in a different position than Toronto. They're in a different position than Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay has no cap space, could never take that contract on, wants to win a Stanley Cup, so that player's not even in the conversation. Ottawa is just a budget team. Cap space doesn't matter. This is just a dollar amount that Eugene Melnyk's going to have to cut a check for.
Mm-hmm.
So he's a better fit in Ottawa because he's not going to compete for any ice with Carlson, not going to be on the top pair. And he'll fit in nice with Cody Ceci, play a little bit of PK, probably not much power play time once they get a real look at what he can do on the power play. And he'll fit in, and they'll marginalize his minutes, and he might be a better player for Ottawa than he was for Toronto. Ottawa, that city just seems to like players that just don't have that swagger. You know, they're just kind of the hard-working guy that you don't really have a personality for, it, and that would be perfect for him in Ottawa.
So we understand the acquisition of Phaneuf is an effort by the Senators to get to the playoffs. Whether it's successful or not, whether Phaneuf can be the right piece is still to be determined. But that's the agenda, and we understand that. And as you said, the long-term implications are going to be probably unhappy, ugly. But for the time being, we know why they did it. On the other hand, we are hearing that the Senators are probably the most likely team to do a deal with Tampa for Jonathan Drouin. He is not that guy. He is not a guy who's going to step into your lineup, I don't think, and be impactful immediately. Is he? And if that's the case, does that confuse you at all? It does me.
Well, the only thing I will say about trading for Drouin is you really don't know what kind of player he is. You know, yeah, he had great points in junior and played on a really good team with some really good line mates. But is he dependable without the puck at the NHL level against men? And that's the reason he was a healthy scratch. That's the reason Marchessault played in the playoffs and not him. And so if you make a deal for this player, there's a really good chance that Tampa Bay is not going to get value for him, because you're not going to overpay for a wish or he may. You know, when you put may in a sentence, you're not overpaying. So maybe it is a good time to try to grab a player that didn't get along with a coach, isn't going to play there, now doesn't get along with the GM, has an agent who is a pain in the neck for Stevie, and so you look then to, let's start fresh. Let's have a new team, a new start. And you know the way it is with every organization.
Yeah, they always think we can fix them.
We can salvage this player.
Yeah.
The player comes in, and sometimes it works, And most times it doesn't. The player is what the player is. What he has showed you early, you get late.
Well, but, I mean, if I told you that you were going to trade for the third player overall in a draft, one of the richest drafts in recent history, it might be worth the risk.
Absolutely. And that's why I think the timing to get this player is great now versus having him show us maybe he is that player that was drafted third overall and can play dependably in the NHL and put points up. And because there were early parts of this season where he looked fantastic.
Yeah.
And, you know, that situation in Tampa, it's strange at times because, you know, you've got a star player in Stamkos who's not signed and the coach isn't sure if he's a winger or a center. So you can imagine if you're just a player who's sitting in the press box, there's not going to be a whole lot of respect given to you for sure.
This is a tough question to ask, but would the Toronto Maple Leafs really like to lose the rest of the way?
Yes. Now, don't ask the players that.
No, I understand that.
You know, you're sitting looking.
Yeah, but they are not a team really anymore. They are a bunch of individuals trying to create enough of an impression, either with the Maple Leafs or with somebody else, to have a place to go skate next year.
Oh, okay.
That's really.
I thought you meant now.
No, next year. That's what they're in it for, and they're. I'm sure they're going to follow Babcock's lead. You know, do the team things, whatever. But at the end of it, their vision is: I got to do something for me. My job is on the line. It's less so with Edmonton, and Edmonton's been down this road, and Edmonton's had five or whatever it is first number one picks.
Four.
Okay. Maple Leafs haven't had any. Do you have any idea what it's like to play on a team that where you really know the agenda is don't win?
No, that's got to be really hard for the players in the room, especially as they watch their captain leave. And, you know, some players you're talking about playing for next week, there are players in that room that are playing for 2 weeks from now to go and play with another team and have a chance at winning.
Yeah.
You know, they're looking just to get off the ship.
There's that too, yeah.
The ship's got a hole in it.
Yep.
And, you know, what the Leafs are selling, I mean, I joke about it, but it's cap space. That's what they're selling.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the glass half full, you say this. They get a chance with a lot of money to go into the free agent market and improve their team. They get a chance with 11 draft picks in this draft to improve their team, potentially 12 if Pittsburgh makes the playoffs and the first-round pick goes for Kessel, the Kessel
right.
deal. They have a team in the Marlies that is having a career.
Best ever season. Yeah.
So they've got that going. They've got a player in the minors, Nylander, who was leading the AHL before he got hurt at the World Juniors in scoring. They've got a guy in junior, Mitch Marner. He's got something like 98 points in 30-some games. So you're starting to get some of the pieces, and you're going to get potentially an Austin Matthews or Jacob Chychrun in this draft coming up. So it can come together relatively quick, and you don't need first-round picks to make it happen. You know, you look at the Montreal Canadiens, third round and beyond, 16 of their players are drafted in the third round and beyond. So you don't need to have the first pick all the time. Just have to have the right scouts. So that's what they're selling. That's their game plan. This has been a full reboot. They talked about the pain. And I'll give Mike credit again. He was walking down that bench looking at the names on the back knowing, you're gone, you're gone, you're gone, and you're gone. But he still coaches like they're going to be there forever.
No, I know. So where does that leave the Leafs and Stamkos? We don't know what Donnie Meehan was on with us yesterday, who represents Steven, and, you know, he's going to play his cards close to the vest, and we appreciate that. But if Stamkos doesn't get a deal done with Tampa and does dip his toe in free agency, do the Toronto Maple Leafs go full bore, first of all, to get him? Does Stamkos respond and say, I want to play for my hometown team? And the fact that this club probably isn't going to be a lot better for at least two more years, at least, does that inhibit either side, in your opinion?
Well, I listened to the interview yesterday, and there was a lot of in-between-the-lines with Donnie yesterday.
I thought so, too.
And so, for me, what I was hearing him say is it's not just about the money. And that is true, because, you know, players, it's saying life. If you have your health, you never think about it. Take away health, and that's all you think about. And so for Stammer, he's got all kinds of money already at 25. And he knows he's going to get a 7 or 8 year deal this time and probably another 5 after that. Money's never going to be an issue. To me, for him, it's about respect around the league, where when he goes to the All-Star game and Kopitar has been taken care of and Kane and Taze have been taken care of, they haven't taken care of me in the right way. Positionally, he's going to make that decision. Do I really want to play wing and fight with this coach when I want to play center? That's what I want to play. So there's a lot of factors that will go into making this decision. And it may be that I want to play center. I want to be part of the Leafs. And the contract's right. I can make more money in seven than I can make in eight in Tampa Bay. And that might be the decision he makes. But I didn't get the feeling from Donnie that Steven was just going to look at the tax implications of playing in lovely Florida and say, okay, it's good enough for me. I like wearing flip-flops and playing there.
But you know, Glenn, that the Florida teams, Dallas and Nashville, all use that card when they try to sign players.
Well, sure they do.
Yeah, Nashville used it with Phil Kessel. He signed in Toronto.
Yeah. Well, it can happen the other way, too, yeah.
You make, it's just not like into a box.
Well, he wasn't a free agent signing in Toronto. That was the Bruins management. That was Peter Chiarelli trading.
Yeah. So the decision will be made, and as we get closer to the end of this season and playoffs, you know, at the start of the year, the player had really no leverage, none. Club's in control. I got a whole year to play. As we get 130 days away from free agency or 100 days away, the players, he's going to have all the leverage. Because Steven could say, and I would encourage him to stand up to a mic and say, I'm not going to activate my trade clause. I'm staying here the whole year. So don't ask me any more questions. July 1, you'll know where I'm playing.
So when we asked Donnie that question yesterday about the 29th of February, he called it a sensitive day.
Sensitive day. In other words, what the player's vision is for his future may not be what the club's vision is for his future. Milan Mihalik is in the same situation when he came to Toronto. They had to ask him first, would he come to Toronto? His vision was to stay in Ottawa. You know, part of that no-move clause, it's almost like a financial component to a contract. And yet, you know, the player is being asked all the time to get rid of it. It should be in part of the CBA. If you give a player a no-move, you can't even ask him to move. You're both stuck with each other for the rest of the term. And that's never happened. But, you know, for Stamkos, a sensitive issue, yeah, because I'm sure if the club thinks that they're not going to get him pen to paper, well, you're going to let that asset walk out the door? I think ownership at some point gets involved.
What do you think the chances are that he moves?
I haven't talked to him recently, but I will say this about every player that's kind of in the game that has that status. If you piss that player off, there's a real good chance he moves.
Do you have the sense that he dislikes Cooper so much that he wants out?
I just don't understand why Cooper doesn't play him.
Nobody does. Nobody does.
I can't figure that out for the life of me.
Well, we don't. We don't know why he doesn't play him at center ice, and we don't know why he doesn't play him 21 minutes a night.
And, you know, there's been games in the playoffs where he's got the ninth most minutes of any Tampa.
I understand.
Player.
I know.
I don't get that.
And Tyler Johnson's got a broken wrist at the same time.
And still playing on the power play.
Yeah, and now, I don't want to dredge up old news, but when Steve Yzerman signs John Cooper to a four-year extension, what's that message to Steven Stamkos?
Well, it's pretty strong.
Well, that's what I mean.
Yeah, in a lot of ways, you know, if you sign with Toronto and you don't like Mike Babcock, then probably it would be a good idea to get on the subway and go somewhere else, because he's not going anywhere. Cooper's not going anywhere. Yzerman's not going anywhere. So, you know, and the one thing about Stamkos, he's a very proud guy, very talented guy, very competitive guy, real stubborn guy, in the sense that if, as I said, if you piss him off, like if Kopitar had been pissed off enough in Los Angeles, look out.
Yeah,
he moves.
He goes, yeah.
You look at Kane and Taves, their deal was done a full year ahead of their deal expiring.
Right.
And the general manager went to Pat Brisson and said, look, you could ask for 12 and I'd have to give it to you.
But the one difference in those two situations, and maybe I'm naive to this, but the one difference between all those situations you mentioned and Steven's situation is those players won cups in those cities. And that changes so much, or does it?
No, because it takes a team to win a cup. You can't look at Mike Gartner's career and say it was lousy because he didn't hoist the Stanley Cup over.
100% agree with you.
A Hall of Famer who, when he was on teams, John Van Beesbrouck didn't give him enough saves so they could win a cup. Or when he came to Toronto. This group wasn't ready to win a cup. You know, Washington, they weren't ready to win a cup. So it takes more than just one guy. I think when you look at players, you have comparables. This is what this guy is compared to, and the three in the world are Kopitar, Taves, and Kane. And they were all signed by Pat Brisson. And the biggest agent in sport in hockey is Donnie Meehan. And if you think that he's going to get schooled by Pat Brisson in this negotiation or by Steve Yzerman,
forget it, yeah.
Not a chance.
No chance.
So as the days tick off, the player looks at it and has now said, I've taken all the risk here, right? But I'm starting to get all the leverage. And if it goes to free agency, I can't even describe how many teams would be after a player like him.
No.
We have not had a center iceman in Toronto, a first-rate center iceman since Matt Sundin.
So let me take one more stab at this in a sort of an interesting different direction. If, in fact, it is clear that the Lightning and Stamkos are not going to get a deal, and the Lightning then says, well, we don't want the asset to walk out the door without anything getting anything for him. They put him on the market prior to the trade deadline. That's the only time they can do it. And we're getting damn close to that. So now the conversations begin. Do the Toronto Maple Leafs jump into that conversation with the intent of trying to get him to sign a long-term contract prior to free agency?
But this is all with the caveat that Steven Stamkos has to say, yeah, I'll take the trade.
Yeah. We understand that.
But he may say no. That could be, Steve, it's Steve. I want to trade you. Hey, Steve, it's Steve. There's no way you're trading me.
Well, and we had the same scenario in Toronto when the Leafs were 4 points out of the playoffs, and they went to Mats and asked if he would waive his no trade to be traded.
Yeah, and he said...
Captain's going to be the first one in the lifeboat. Not a chance. And that was it for the relationship between Mats and the Toronto Maple Leafs, and took years for it to be... It's amazing how the captains for this Leaf team, it takes years to settle some of these relationships. But it did for Mats. And you know, Stamkos has a chance of winning a cup with their team. They definitely do. Whether they can keep that group together moving forward because of all the players they have to sign, that's going to be impossible. So, you know, he's not going to be the first guy to say, I'm out of here, and I'm going to go to Toronto and play 22 useless games. I want to win the cup. And I was that close last year, and probably if I had one of my players without a broken wrist and a goalie with one leg, I would have had a real good chance of doing it. And
yeah,
a coach who would have played an elite star player who was the only game-breaker in their lineup could have been a different scenario.
Real quickly, before we let you go, the Nazem Kadri situation, the throat slash yesterday or the other day, he gets a $5,000 fine, which is the max. Shannon opined earlier that him sitting out tonight is, in fact, punishment from the Toronto Maple Leafs.
It wouldn't surprise me if we hear about it later on. I mean, he played the whole game, and now he's got a lower body injury?
The days of salute or not salute, lying about whether you saluted or you didn't salute, trying to fight a fan on Twitter, which is some of the stuff that happened last year, decided you're going to fix your flat tire yourself and miss practice, or a player that's stupid enough to think that we're going to show up and cover games and not have cameras on you. That doesn't happen with this organization anymore. It doesn't happen under Lou's watch, Shanny's watch, Babcock's watch, or Jacques Lemaire's watch. It is a different circus in town now. And I embrace it. I think it's fantastic. And the kid deserves the fine, and he deserves... Okay, because you're wearing the crest on the front of the sweater when all the TV cameras are showing it coast to coast. You're a reflection of the organization and the players that played before you and built the organization, not you.
Okay,
before.
Does this impact his future status with the Toronto Maple Leafs?
I wouldn't say this one incident, but I would say...
Well, but there's been a bunch.
He's got to get his act together. I mean, losing 6-0 to St. Louis last year and then deciding to sleep in for a practice, that's the NHL. This just doesn't happen at the NHL. It doesn't happen when you're the worst team in the East. You've got to eat humble pie until you can be that team, like Chicago, that walks around with a swagger because you had 3 cups in 6 years.
Well, yeah. John, you were going to jump in.
No, would it surprise you that this is just a decision to bench him and they just don't want to embarrass him anymore and they said, we'll take this one and call you a lower body injury situation?
Would not surprise me at all.
Okay.
Well, what would be the harm? They don't get to 49 points?
No.
You're trying to teach this guy how to be a pro.
Look what they did in Calgary. Look what they did in Calgary with those three guys.
Yeah.
So, a little different in Calgary in the sense that boy, the points are valuable, and that was a gutsy call. But this one here, you know what? He has to learn how to be a pro, and that doesn't have you do the throat-slashing gesture with the maple leaf crest on the front of the sweater and all the TV cameras showing it coast to coast to coast.
The significant difference in Calgary, though, is they didn't hide what they were doing.
No. No, no. Well,
where the Maple Leafs, essentially, we believe, may be hiding what they're doing.
That would be, again, as I explained to you earlier, that was my logic, is that lose one of those guys.
Keeps
those kind of things in the room. He doesn't advertise.
Understood.
No, the first thing I thought of, John, when I heard about it was, so Kadri talks about how he was foggy when he got hit and didn't realize he was doing it, which is the new out all the time. I'm concussed. So the first thing I thought of was, well, could they just be precautionary? Because he did say publicly, I was foggy.
Yeah.
Well, you can't say foggy, and I got my bell rung, and I was seeing stars. Not today.
And call it a lower body injury.
Well, and then call it a lower body injury. You know, I mean.
Just call it general fatigue.
Healy, thanks a lot, pal. We enjoyed it.
Good stuff, yeah.
Talk to you soon.
All right. Cheers, boys.
Glenn Healy of the NHL on Sportsnet. When we come back, Richard Petty will join us, the former CEO of Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment. A guy who loved his basketball, still does, I think. Mm-hmm. And I wonder what involvement, if any, he will have this weekend. Will he go to the game? Is he sitting in a box? Was he invited?
Sure.
Persona non grata, like me? Does he need a place to watch the game?
We could go to your house.
Yeah, well, notice I didn't invite you again.
I know.
Richard Petty next.
I'm busy.
When primetime continues.
Gotta go to the game, sit in a box.
This is the Sportsnet Radio and Television Networks.
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Minutes before the hour, Bob McCown, John Shannon in our Toronto studios. He's worn a few hats in his day. He's probably best known to this audience as the former top dog at Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment. Richard Petty joins us. Mr. Petty, how are you?
I couldn't be better. Excellent, Bob. Thank you.
We wanted to call you because the NBA All-Star Game is this weekend. And I don't want to, before we start, if somebody had said to me, Richard Petty, is he more of a hockey fan than or a basketball fan? I would have said, I think he's more of a basketball fan. Are you?
Well, I get asked that question a lot, and I used to say it was like kids. You said you love them all equally.
But, yeah, but what's the truth?
Follow me on Twitter, and it's all basketball.
Yeah. But Richard...
I love basketball. I loved it when I was... That's why, you know, dream job. I wanted to be run a basketball
No, I understand.
Team.
I get it.
It was started... Palestra Group, right? Was that you? Were you Palestra?
Yeah, that was Larry and I, and spending $2 million and brought the NBA to Toronto. We just didn't get the team. That's all.
So
it took us a couple of years later to get it.
I remember sitting around a boardroom when you suggested Toronto should bid for an All-Star game, and I think it was supposed to be the 2011 one, if memory serves me. What's this weekend mean to you?
Well, I think a lot of things have come together so beautifully. What, after 20 years, the team is excellent. It starts with the team is excellent. The fan base is terrific. As you recall, John, we used to talk about you really got to put a basketball in the hands of the kids because someday they'll wake up and be season seat holders. Mm-hmm. And not only are they season seat holders, but they're playing the game. And, you know, what, there's 8 or 9 kids in the NBA now that are Canadians. So there's that. There's a great arena. There's a new practice facility that Dwayne says he'll give me a tour of when I get back from Florida. 905 D-League team. You know, it's all come together. Basketball, number 2 sport in the world, and it's strong, very strong in Toronto.
Are you out of the country now?
Yes, I am.
So you won't be around for the All-Star game?
No, I'm going to stay in Florida where it's a lot warmer.
Yeah, I understand. Well, it's going to be like 0 Fahrenheit and minus a million this weekend.
There's all this perception that Toronto's this cold place, and And when the, you know, the players and the agents and the managers.
Well, they're coming on the right weekend, Petty. I got news for you.
Wow. It's going to reinforce that for a bit. But yeah. Also the city's going to show well, the building. It'll be a great event.
What do you think it means to the fan base here? I understand it means something to the periphery, to those who observe, because the NBA All-Star Game has more stars at it than any other All-Star Game. I mean, you're going to get more entertainment people, more players that aren't even playing. There'll be lots of stars sighting at this one. But what do you think it means to the fan base? Anything?
Well, I think it's all positive. It is a world-class event. It's everything that you just described. I think it's probably more casual fans and wannabe fans because
yeah, maybe.
It's a world-class event. I mean, you know that with the NHL, you really don't get a lot of outsiders coming into an NHL All-Star game because the season seat holders buy the tickets. In the NBA, there's just no way. The best you can do as a season seat holder is get a choice of the Saturday or the Sunday. Mm-hmm. So that means there's all the celebrities and the sponsors, a lot of people coming in. And, you know, that just makes it a more of a premium event, and people are attracted to that kind of stuff.
Richard, you've talked glowingly about the franchise. Could, in the end, though, it still goes back to team performance, though, doesn't it? Isn't that really the difference that has changed this franchise?
Oh, absolutely. It's, you know, people used to talk about 20 years ago, is a team going to survive? And once we merged with the Leafs, that was never a question. They were financially sound. It was never an issue with that. It was all about, would we ever win? And, you know, now we're sitting there with one of the top five teams in the NBA and second in the East. And I understand there's 64 straight sellouts. That's akin to what we used to do with Vincent for a couple of years. Yeah, the team's winning, and, you know, winning's good. It's good for business. It's good for fans. It makes it arguably one of, you know, the best sports in Toronto.
I wanted to ask you if you saw this coming, but it's kind of a dumb question because you couldn't possibly, you know, I mean, you hoped it would come, but I don't. Did you think that we would get to the point where we would have this many Canadians in the NBA, that basketball would become a true alternative for kids growing up to play? I'm not talking about attendance or even the record of the team, but just the impact that an NBA franchise has obviously had on the maturation of the game in general in this country.
No, I don't think I could have forecast that, you know, we'd have two first overall draft choices, and you know, then, you know, imagine a few years back and they're like one NBA player would be on the Canadian national team, and that player was, you know, 14th on the roster.
That's
of
right.
The NBA team they played. So, you know, no, I don't think I could imagine that at all. Could I imagine that it would resonate with fans? Yes. I mean, years ago we started talking about, boy, the demographics of Toronto are really changing, and they're all soccer fans, as you know, 50% of Toronto's not born in Toronto, yeah. And they're coming to Canada and they follow soccer. And what else do they follow? Basketball. So we thought the demographics were going in our direction. And you see that in any game now. It looks like Toronto there, with the Toronto of 2016. Leaf games still don't reflect the cosmopolitan and diverse nature of Toronto. So we saw that coming. But did we see the quality of players? No.
Let me ask you one more thing.
Okay.
Do you, and this is, we've been down this road in various forms over the years, and probably will continue to go down it. But as we look at the evolution of the game and the ability for this country to produce, or for a country to be able to produce as many really good young basketball players as we have over the last 4 or 5 years, if not for Vince Carter, would this have happened?
Vince, it's well known we had our differences, Vince and I, but you know, he got it all going. He was electrifying as a rookie. We all remember the dunk contest. He got us into the playoffs. I mean, and kids, you know, they wanted to wear his jersey. He wanted to wear number 15. So, real hats off to Vince. I, none of us realized it. I don't think Vince realized what he was doing to Canada. I know when he reflects on it now, he sees what he really helped contribute. Vince should get a lot of the credit.
Yeah, I think so.
You talked about Canada. When the Grizzlies were sold and moved, did that hurt or help the Raptors?
I don't really think it had anything to do with the Raptors. I think it's just a real shame. I remember sitting at the Board of Governors meeting when they voted on Memphis, and I looked at Memphis, and the leagues, whether it's the NHL or NBA, they really put out a full presentation on the demographics and economics and blah, blah, blah about the city, and it just wasn't a good city. I can remember sitting with Harry West at lunch one day, and he made a very profane statement that blah, blah, blah will never make a blah, blah, blah dollar in Memphis. Mm. And so we abandoned, one of the great cities in the world, and it's too bad. It was very impatient. You know, we sold it to a fellow who quickly wanted to move it to Memphis. That was a shame. I think it affected the growth of the sport in Canada. I don't think it really affected Toronto, but it's nice. I mean, you see with Major League Soccer, you've got three Canadian clubs now. It's a great rivalry. It's a real shame, and boy, I just don't see it going back to Vancouver.
You don't.
Well, I was going to ask you, the Pacific Northwest has been abandoned essentially, well, except for Portland.
Except they've got an IOU for Seattle. They've got an owner right now. So that's who's going to get it. You know what's a real killer right now? It's going to be a killer for Quebec City. For the NHL, that dollar at 71 cents, wow.
Yeah.
Because, an NBA franchise, if they did expand or they moved, you're talking close to $1 billion U.S. And there's, as we found out in selling Maple Leaf Sports Entertainment for $2 billion, there's not a lot of rich Canadians who want to do that. Now, you could get a rich American coming in, but there was not a lot of people lined up at the door, and that's why we ended up selling it to two organizations, two companies, not to a rich person. And you see the rich guys, and that's what they are, buying NBA teams right across the United States. We just don't have that. So the dollar and the lack of rich guys, if you like.
That's how they stay rich, Richard.
Optimistic.
That's how they stay rich, Richard. That's how they stay rich. They come on now.
They don't have big toys.
Well, the toys have really done well of late, but there was, 6-7 years ago, franchise values were really flat. Everyone was burning through cash. They were losing money every year because they truly were, despite what some people said. They were losing money, but always figured they'd make it when they sell. Well, right now with franchises going close to $1 billion in both leagues and $1.5 billion in the NFL, you can make money flipping teams. So it is a rich man's sport. And these rich men hope to make money on it.
You're going to take in a baseball game or two when spring training rolls around? Are you inclined to do that?
No, I saw for 4 years, I saw something like 80 baseball games a year. So I've only been to one since I left Skydome.
Oh, wow.
So I think I'll just hang out at the beach.
Attaboy.
I'll say hello to Colleen.
Okay, thanks, John.
We thank you for joining us as always, and we'll hope to see you when you get back.
Okay.
Thank you, Richard.
Anytime.
Richard Petty, the former CEO of Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment.
I would have owed you a steak dinner. I just reading between the lines. I would have owed you a steak dinner.
What, reading between what lines?
I actually thought Richard would be here this weekend. To me, this for me, knowing the organization and being part of the organization, knowing Richard's role and everything from the first hole, as they built Air Canada Center, as they built Maple Leaf Square. As he tried to, build the brand and use the engines, I thought this would be an important weekend for him to be here, despite the fact that it's going to be, minus 16,
Well, don't feel like because I didn't take the bet, you shouldn't feel obligated, since you made the statement in front of the public here of how you were going to be right and I was going to be wrong.
Well, I think I'm wrong. Richard wouldn't admit it, but I think, I'm sure.
Well, I think sure you're wrong now. And I would think that, in all humility, a steak dinner is the least you should pay.
See, those words, all humility, have never been used in the same sentence with either you or me.
Well, okay, at least you got that part right. Still, I'm a little peckish, John.
Yeah, so am I, Bob. We might have to go to our favorite restaurant one night.
A little trip to our favorite place might be in order. Our thanks to Glenn Healy, Richard Petty for joining us, Don Van Natta, and John Paul Morosi earlier. Thank you for watching or listening. Roundtable tomorrow. Good night from Toronto.